Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola, joined for a very special Thursday by the one, the only, I'm fairly certain the only, Abilene Sabrina. Sabrina, how's it going?
It's going great. Good morning.
Good morning to you as well. I'm excited to have you on. I don't know, did anyone see? Did you see in the chat? New intro, everybody. I don't know if you noticed, Sabrina, but finally, after months of the audience asking me or threatening me, I have updated the intro and I actually threw in a video that you and I covered, that political ad from Chile of the animals dancing and stuff like that. I've got a little bit of that in there too.
Can so. Never forget that one.
No, that was, I actually got myself really dizzy during that, trying to do the head shake that the pigs were doing. So anyway, it's updated and some people missed it. Well, I guess you gotta watch the live show tomorrow too. But anyway, Sabrina, it's been a little bit since you've been on. I know that you've been busy in your own work. You came out today as a hardcore radical libertarian, correct?
Yes, don't tread on me, John. Kidding. Mm-hmm. Very, very far from it. Yo, I uploaded a sketch on just the IRS coming up with new ways to tax people this year, because I saw that that thing on their website that said that if you stole anything, you have to report it on your taxes. So I thought, okay, where can we go from there? So just uploaded a quick little sketch.
So wait, the IRS stealing thing is real? That's actually real?
That's real. If you look at the IRS website right now, it says like stolen property, that it has to be reported on your taxes.
I think I know what this is about. I think that they saw that the FBI had done that thing where they said that if any of the people who attacked the Capitol on January 6th lost anything, there's a lost and found. So just call and you can maybe get your stuff back. And a bunch of people called in, so they thought maybe people are more gullible than we thought. I don't think people are going to announce their stolen property, but hey, maybe I'm wrong. When police departments steal people's stuff while arrested, do they have to report that? Are they going to get taxed on that? I kind of doubt it. Anyway,
well, if they report it.
Exactly. So that's available on Sabrina's channel. So everyone check that out. And thank you all for being here as we launch into a momentous and hopefully fun hour and a half of news. We've got a bunch of stuff we're going to talk about, including the big announcement that has to do with ISIS. We've got Tucker Carlson deciding to stick up for the outgoing CEO of CNN, sort of. He has a reason for it. Facebook's having a bad day, so that's a good day for pretty much everyone. And then we've got for our last half hour an absolutely massive meanwhile in. We're gonna be running through news from around the world, outside of the world, in the digital world, and beyond. So that should be fun. You're not gonna wanna miss that. And along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great so that people know that we're live. And with all of that said, and my monitor now out of the frame, Sabrina, are you ready to talk about some news?
Let's go.
Okay, regrettably, we're going to be starting on the most serious stuff, but with that said, let's jump into this.
The United States military forces successfully removed a major terrorist threat to the world, the global leader of ISIS, known as Haji Abdullah. He took over as leader of ISIS in 2019. After the United States counterterrorism operation killed al-Baghdadi. Since then, ISIS has directed terrorist operations targeting Americans, our allies and our partners, and countless civilians in the Middle East, Africa, and in South Asia.
So that was a Biden administration announcement, a little press conference following the earlier news that broke this morning that the current leader of ISIS had been killed in an attack, which we'll give you context on. As Biden says there, it was a follow up to the killing of al-Baghdadi years earlier. His death didn't have, you know, I guess the proposed, or I don't know, was anyone predicting that that would be the end of ISIS? Surely this time, though, they'll be done. They won't simply choose another leader. Now look, obviously, it's a good news, you know, absent all of the consequences, which we'll get into. They had been conducting attacks and those sorts of things. But I don't know, it feels to me a little bit like the Biden administration looking for some good news, perhaps trying to distract us from the other failures. We should acknowledge this, and that's why we are. It's our lead off story of the show. But Sabrina, what do you make of all this?
I don't like that even in that little press conference that Biden did, he didn't really answer many questions. He didn't really answer any questions about casualties that quickly, which there were. And it's really sad to see it in stories like this. So it seems like it's, you know, a touch of good news. But like you said, you know, you take down one and another just takes leadership. So is this the end? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of doubt it, but we want to provide that information, which eventually was released. So they sent in special forces in helicopters. This is in a rebel-held corner of Syria. They engaged in a hours-long gunfight with gunmen there. Residents in the area were sort of witness to this and reported some of the initial details. First responders reported that 13 people had been killed during the raid, including 6 children and 4 women. Now, Biden and the US government have what they are saying was the cause of these deaths. So they say it was that when the now former leader of ISIS died, he exploded a bomb that killed him as well as members of his own family. So I haven't seen an explicit thing where they say this was the only reason that any civilians died, but this is the message that is out there is, oh yeah, okay, so yes, civilians did die, but he blew himself up. And that's like the front page on Fox News is cowardly last stand by him. He blew himself up. And maybe that's entirely true. Maybe that is exactly how all of the civilians died. Or maybe in a raid where there was hours of gunfire, civilians were killed through that as well. I don't have any final answers. This is the sort of thing where speculation might eventually be amended with actual news, but other than the witnesses in the area, we would be getting this information from the US military. So I would take that with a massive grain of salt. In any event, Biden stressed that all Americans have returned safely from the operation, which to some Americans will be the only thing that matters. I don't know, for me, I kind of think it's yet another instance where we launched this strike and civilians died as a result. So let's at least acknowledge that, Sabrina.
At the very least, but I think you're right to take it with a massive grain of salt, especially when they say, you know, 13 people had died, but the majority are women and children. It's majority children, 6 children, 4 women. I don't think that it justified killing those innocent people, in my own opinion. So yeah, even if it was a matter of him purposely unaliving himself, big grain of salt.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, you know, we could widen our scope and say, well, okay, theoretically, if he had stayed in charge, would that have resulted in more civilians dying in the short term, the middle term, or the long term? What will happen as a result of the power vacuum? Could that result in more or less people dying? These are, you know, these are disgusting considerations to have to make. Hopefully they're making them and that it's not just purely what effect will this have domestically when we release this news. But anyway, yes, people have died. There had been a bounty on this individual's head for some time of $10 million. They apparently maybe got a tip. We'll see. We'll see if they release any more information about that. In any event, ISIS recently has been a little bit more active than it had been in previous years. There was a series of attacks in the region, including an assault late last month to seize a prison in northeast Syria, holding at least 3,000 IS detainees. Biden said that al-Qureshi, the former leader who was just killed, had been responsible for the prison strike, as well as genocide against the Yazidi people in Iraq in 2014, which, as with every other fact that we have said in the story, it's entirely possible that that is true. And that's as far as I can really go in assuming that anything that we hear about this is 100% true. There was a question about whether there will be another hero dog that comes about as a result of this raid. I haven't yet seen anything like that. So we won't have Biden making comments like the weird dog comments that Trump made back when he was president. But anyway, it's just like there is still the ongoing threat of terrorism in the region, obviously. I and many others have pushed for us to get out because we don't believe that, you know, it's not even really a question of whether it's our responsibility to deal with it, but that it seems like over the past few decades and even longer that the overall effect of our involvement in the region is an increase in the amount of chaos, the amount of death, the radicalization, those sorts of things. So I don't know, maybe this strike will break that historic pattern, Sabrina, but I don't necessarily have a lot of hope.
Yeah, maybe we'll just have to wait for the next document leak to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, maybe we'll finally get some revelations. Okay, President Biden has had a busy day, not only announcing the death of the leader of ISIS, but also speaking at the prayer breakfast, which TYT has done quite a lot of good reporting on. Jonathan Larson has a number of write-ups about what the group behind the prayer breakfast has been up to over the past couple of decades. In any event, we want to give you a little bit of what Joe Biden chose to say at the National Prayer Breakfast, which is the sort of quote that just might make you lose your breakfast. Listen.
Vice President Harris, Majority Leader Schumer, Mitch McConnell. Mitch, I don't want to hurt your reputation, but we really are friends. and that is not an epiphany we're having here at the moment. You've always done exactly what you've said. You're a man of your word, and you're a man of honor. Thank you for being my friend.
Is there like a code of like conduct for brunches where you're supposed to be like nice and even lie to do it? Like Sabrina, he was talking about Mitch McConnell and said he's friends with him, but more importantly, he's a man of his word. He always does what he says. What did you think?
I mean, yeah, I believe that. I think that there's a big part of Joe Biden's heart that has a soft spot for conservatives. So I'm not surprised to hear him call Mitch McConnell his friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, I think that he wishes we still had what he's describing right there. And I think that we did have a bit more of that. You had politicians on the Democratic and the Republican side that could maintain friendships that would not be fractured by disagreements, even on like the most emotional issues. But can we acknowledge why that was? Why it was that they were able to still be friends and still go to dinners and still go to each other's weddings? Because those issues didn't really affect them. They didn't really care. A lot of them were just playing. And on the issues that did affect them, they didn't really disagree when it came to their tax rates, those sorts of things, business regulations. Like they got to be friends because these weren't core disagreements to them. These were things that they would cosplay occasionally. They would go to a convention, they'd pretend to care about this issue, and then they'd go back and have a delightful $1 million brunch or whatever. Now he's not even gonna acknowledge that. He makes it seem as if it's more like a folksy thing. Am I wrong? Am I the bad guy that I don't really care whether a Democratic and Republican senator grouping are friends or whatever, and in fact think that it might not be a good thing that they can be all chummy?
No, it's not a bad thing at all. Like it's like how Carlin said, it's a big club and you ain't in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does feel like that. Let's give him a chance because this is President Joe Biden's shtick. But he says, I just think that when you learn that another man or woman, you fly on a congressional delegation and you learn that they have a kid with a problem like alcoholism, you learn that they have a daughter who has breast cancer, it's hard to dislike the person. And so one of the things I pray for, and I mean it, is we sort of get back to the place that we really know each other. Like I'm a lefty. I like the idea of some of that. I don't like these people being friends because they're friends against us, as Sabrina said. It's the friendship of an exclusive club that we're not members of and will never be members of. But more importantly, it just seems like such a willful misrepresentation of the circumstances under which things can happen in DC, and they can't. It's not that things don't happen because you haven't bonded over your family enough. They're not, that gives so much needless respect to the supposed, the mythological thought process of an elected official in whether they'll support something or not. As if they're really thinking about it in those terms, rather than making either like sort of shallowly pragmatic calculations about the electoral consequences of doing or not doing something, or more likely just asking their donors what they want and then providing that outcome. It's not like they receive millions of dollars from big oil, but then when it comes time to decide whether we should transition to clean energy, they're like, well, I did have that nice lunch 6 months ago. That I hate the way he's presenting this, because that if that was the way that it ever was, it certainly isn't that way anymore.
No, absolutely not. And even when, you know, he says that it's hard to be mad at somebody who, you know, their family is going through these types of struggles. And he can form friendships with these people. When regular working class people do reach out to him and they tell them about, you know, their struggles, he doesn't seem to care that much to actually enact more tangible change that's actually going to help these people when it comes to, you know, working things out and being civil with, you know, colleagues across the aisle. He's totally fine with that. People who are already okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's definitely a selective willingness to really care about the struggles. Like if I don't know, if Josh Hawley's cousin is an alcoholic, that's an issue for Josh Hawley's cousin, his family, his friends. Hope that he gets the help if he wants it. Outside of that, what effect does it have on most people? Like, what about like you know, some regular woman whose kid has $50,000 in student loan debt? Are you gonna shed tears over that? Are you gonna lose sleep over that? Can that influence the way that you do things? Because you seem to be willing to write off the suffering of tens of millions of people on a regular basis. I understand that they're not rich and well connected. I would argue their opinions and their life experiences still matter. And by the way, I want to just say one more thing, because the particular issue that he was talking about there was Mitch McConnell. And let's say that what Biden is doing is not, as I sort of suspect, a willful misrepresentation of virtually everything having to do with DC and our political structure. Then in that case, that is a really embarrassing thing that he said. That Mitch McConnell, of all people, is honest about what he'll do. He does what he says. We may disagree, but he's an honest man who sticks to the Supreme Court. Like, honestly, do I have to remind you of what happened with Merrick Garland and Amy Coney Barrett? The idea that he, of all politicians, is anything other than he's effectively a lich. He is an undead creature who is in pursuit of power, and he is willing to do and say anything to get it. That's all it is. He has said under multiple Democratic administrations, his only goal is to make sure that they lose. He's not your friend, Biden. He's not, or maybe he is behind the scenes, but politically, he definitely isn't your friend. And it is maddening that Joe Biden could either lie about it or honestly believe that Mitch McConnell wouldn't chuckle if Joe Biden walked away from the podium, fell down the stairs, and broke his neck. Like, the fact that he could think that is so wildly insulting. I don't know exactly what form of insult it is, whether it's a lie or it's just pathetic, but we should all be insulted by what we just heard.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, I guarantee we're going to continue to receive these fundraising emails from the DNC, from Democrats, all just absolutely demonizing Mitch McConnell, saying we have to stop Mitch, we have to stop the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, it's just a grand old brunch.
Yeah, 100%. Is McConnell gonna like let there be up and down votes on pieces of legislation? McConnell, who just a week ago was saying those insane things about your pledge to put a black woman in the Supreme Court, like, and got like super defensive when people asked if there was any diversity whatsoever in his staff. That guy? Oh no, we just disagree honestly. He's a good guy though. Yeah, maybe for you, maybe for people of your class, he's a good guy. We have an issue with him though. Anyway, okay, we are gonna take our first break, discuss some of your comments. When we come back, that's the only teaser I'm gonna give you. We'll be back after this. Okay, with that said, let's get into some more news. It was announced yesterday that the head of CEO Jeff Zucker was gonna be stepping down, which I think a lot of people greeted as great news, other than a few of the hosts at CNN. Now, you might expect, since Fox News hates CNN, that someone like Tucker Carlson would use this as an opportunity to attack Zucker and also CNN, which he sort of did do, but he's also a contrarian. So he found a way to make the stepping down of Zucker a thing about masculinity and the end of America or something. Take a look.
Still, on this day when we should be celebrating Jeff Zucker's departure, we're not celebrating. Why is that? Because we see a pattern here. There are an awful lot of contemptible leaders in corporate America, maybe most of them. But only a certain kind of CEO ever gets fired. It's not the weak ones. The guys who do what they're told, issue the cringy statements, and let the HR department run everything, those people tend to keep their jobs till they retire. People like that just want to get it over with and cash out. They don't take risks. They don't dare to build anything. They're just caretakers. If their dignity is the price of job security, they are happy to pay it. More than at any time in our history, America is run by people like that. It's only the strong who are punished. Strong leaders tend to be abrasive. They're arrogant. Sometimes they're what we now call abusive. They ignore convention. They say outrageous things in public and private. They don't blend in with the group. Often they alienate the more sensitive types around them. They don't have maternal instincts.
Okay, I have thoughts. But first, Sabrina, what did you make of whatever that was?
Tucker Carlson seems really, really obsessed with masculinity. Mm-hmm. And normally people who talk about it that much, they're a little bit more insecure with their own masculinity themselves. So gotta say, I'm almost a little concerned for him.
Yeah, I somewhat disagree. I somewhat disagree. not that I don't think that he's insecure in a variety of ways. I think that insecurity is at the heart of a lot of conservative men. Usually earlier, and then they create this worldview and a series of enemies that they can pawn all of their own problems off to make themselves feel better about their insecurity. I definitely think that's true, but I think for Tucker Carlson and some other right pundits, it's a little bit more intentional, their obsession with masculinity. I don't think that he is allowing just this ongoing crisis of his own manhood to like bleed into his broadcast. I think it is a very intentional thing where they've realized, like equivalent of market research. Oh, so a lot of conservatives are really worried about manhood. And if you like pretend that the libs are taking away their manhood, they'll agree to anything and have no expectations for government. Okay, let's just do the manhood stuff, I guess. Because Tucker is not a guy that, he doesn't even try to come off as masculine. Like Alex Jones eats pulled pork on camera to pretend that he's tough or something. Joe Rogan really wants you to believe he's tough constantly. Some of them do that. But Tucker is, he is a bow tie, basically. He's a walking, talking, sleeping bow tie. And so for me, it seems way more like it's a grift. It is a ruse. It is a way to pull one over on his audience, which is gonna be predominantly male and very worried about their own masculinity. I don't know, what do you think about that?
I think that actually does make more sense, because I think that he's very smart when it does come to like marketing like that, and he has to know his audience. So I think you're right about that. I think he's appealing to the insecure male viewer who would be worried about their own masculinity.
Now, like we're debating what might be leading to this, but let's draw back to what he's talking about there, because he is using Jeff Zucker stepping down supposedly for a relationship he had been having that wasn't disclosed, which could be the reason. I sort of doubt that it's the reason. Clearly something was going on, and he's, even though this guy is a massive enemy of Tucker Carlson's, at least publicly, they probably go to all the same parties and all that. He is making it a thing where, no, he's just being taken down because he's a strong guy. That's it. And what makes you a strong guy? Well, presumably some sort of sexual stuff going on in the background that you weren't supposed to do or say. That's it. And then, and because Tucker Carlson's monologues are all massive leaps devoid of logic, if you do that stuff, you are by definition a good leader, a bold leader, a creative leader. You create things. What? I don't know. CNN panels with 20 people on them. A new career opportunity for Jeffrey Lord, us having to listen to Kayleigh McEnany. What was he creating? Jeff Zucker. What does Tucker create other than deranged men? What like we're just supposed to assume that if a person is bad and if society has evolved to the point where there are consequences for you creating like, you know, an environment of sexual harassment and those sorts of things, you are by definition a better executive. So we should hate when there are consequences. For instance, when Roger Ailes was revealed to have effectively been running Fox News as some sort of non-consensual harem for literally decades. That presumably is a bad thing. Tucker, of course, didn't engage with that because he doesn't have a single ball with which to actually say what he means. It's all implication. But anyway, Sabrina, we're supposed to, I guess, feel bad for Zucker because he's losing his job.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure why Tucker would defend him of all people. Maybe it is for the reasons that, you know, you listed, but maybe he's projecting. Maybe he's worried that that could be something that people might try to take him down for. And so that's why he's like, well, gotta come out in defense, even if it's this guy. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's also defensive of a lot of their other leaders. Like Donald Trump could be criticized and has been for the exact same reasons. Matt Gaetz is, you know, he's potentially going down for the same reasons. And a lot of other CEOs that he does not want to ever suffer any consequences, but he is gonna provide the 5% faux populism of, oh, not, it's not to say that they're not bad people. I bet many of them are. I just won't name any specifics. I'm against corporations in a very vague sense. I don't ever want there to be any regulations or taxes on them, but I understand that you don't like corporations, so I'm gonna pretend that I don't like them either. Anyway, he went on to say a little bit more about this theory. Let's listen.
A lot of modern people are put off by strong leaders, but you've got to have them. Creative masculine energy is the essential quality in any civilization. It's how we got civilization in the first place. But increasingly, boisterous masculinity is systematically suppressed to make way for a timid caretaker class. For people who think the whole point of society is to get to zero COVID infections or eliminate all traffic deaths. Those may sound like virtuous goals. In fact, they're signifiers of decline. Not dying can never be the whole point. If it is, you're already dead.
Now that may seem like a really weird thing to say. Understand this is a guy who has spent the past 2 years desperately trying to kill his viewers. So I guess he would have to try to convince them that trying not to die shouldn't be your like most important priority. But Sabrina, thoughts?
It's really funny how he tries to make like the argument like almost like hyperbolic, like we're all gonna like die. It's inevitable. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like the argument was never like let's prevent all death ever. It's we can prevent a lot of death with these really easy steps. We're very capable of it. So it's just so funny how Tucker uses arguments like that.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And also he's not making the argument that he seems to. So let's be very clear about that. But I'm gonna get to that in one sec. First of all, if you're a conservative and you're watching this, he is going to try to make this a debate between conservatives who are willing to risk things to build stuff. Although again, he hasn't built literally anything. That's not what this argument is about. This is, he is willing to allow you to face risks if that's the requirement for businesses to be free, for work to go back to normal, all of that. He's not suffering any risks. The worst risk he ever has is accidentally poking himself with like a fishing hook or something like that at a Bass Pro Shop. That's it. He's not suffering any. He's vaccinated. He's gonna be just fine. He doesn't want government regulations that might protect you and your family members, your loved ones, your children, your spouse, if that means that they would be a little bit constrained in what they do and their ability to put toxins into the environment and those sorts of things. Let's be very clear about that. Also, it's not an actual, he's not making an actual argument. He would make it seem as if let's not worry about death. Let's not do crazy things to avoid death, which would then be something we could argue against. And I did a version of that already. That's not what he's saying. If that was the case, why does he want to spend tens of billions of dollars to literally wall off the southern border because he's scared an immigrant might come across and kill him? Why are you trying so hard to avoid death in that case? Why are you like arming yourself with an arsenal of AR-15s because you're worried that marauders might storm across your yard and down the door? Why are you trying so hard to stay alive? They don't believe any of this stuff. Why are you taking the hydroxychloroquine, the ivermectin? Do you want to live forever? These aren't actual principles that they have. He's trying to get you to accept the inevitable death that he has advocated for the past few years. That's it. God, let's go to one more video. Tucker Carlson has an issue with Jen Psaki. I get it. I have issues with Jen Psaki. We have slightly different issues though, as he will make clear in this clip, which is responding to Jen Psaki addressing the fact that Spotify is going to have disclaimers now on COVID related news as their sort of sop to the people who want Joe Rogan to be a little more responsible. Spotify's not cool with that. Now everything is going to be labeled. But here's what she had to say about that in his response.
This disclaimer, it's a positive step, but we want every platform to continue doing more to call out mis and disinformation while also uplifting accurate information. But ultimately, you know, our view is it's a good step, it's a positive step, but there's more that can be done.
There's more that can be done? Hey, you little fascist, that's a threat. It's exactly what it is. Politicians and their spokeschicks didn't used to talk this way. They were not allowed to talk this way because the First Amendment explicitly prohibits it. You're not allowed to use government power to shut down broadcasters who criticize you, period.
There's a few things I love about that. One is that him saying that she's not allowed to say the thing because the First Amendment prohibits it. Again, that is a mind blower right there. But then of course the spokeschick, he goes on to say, let's see. So obviously that's completely ignorant because she's completely ignorant. Go back to Oberlin, honey. So this is just so, it's so try hard scripted 1950s sexism. Like he's going around in his daily life calling women honey. That's what he does. And spokeschick, that wasn't a thing that they thought up because they knew that their sexist audience would like it. It's just so pathetically intentional.
No, absolutely. I completely agree that it is pathetically intentional, like when it comes to Jen Psaki. But even what they were discussing in regards to like Spotify offering that little disclaimer, which is not much of a move at all. But I mean, these are the people who are okay with taking, you know, books out of libraries, with censoring what teachers can teach students. And yet he is going pretty darn far to protect a podcaster on Spotify who is, you know, blatantly giving out misinformation on health issues. So it's so weird how that is like fascist censorship, but wanting to remove actual books from schools.
Exactly.
It's how you know he doesn't actually mean it. He's just, you know, taking whatever dig he can, and he's punching her from the right. Which is weird.
Exactly. Yeah. He's really worried about her fascism. Now watch his documentary about how we should be more like Hungary. The whole thing is absolutely ridiculous. I don't understand why anyone watches it, honestly. Hey, you little fascist. That's a threat. That's exactly what that is. I get people listening to Alex Jones. He believes the crazy thing he says. When he talks about dragons flying up to knock out satellites and lasers from space, he means what he's saying. Tucker Carlson he's not even good at pretending that he is actually invested in any of this. He's like, has there ever been a case where this much damage is being done to a political discourse by someone so fundamentally emotionally disconnected from the process? Anyway, with that said, let's get to a weird little bit of business news, because I know most of you watch a show for business news and stock market updates. So let's jump into that. Facebook is not having a good day. I know that they're not technically Facebook, they're Meta. I hate it and I'm not going to do it. No, it's like Marjorie Greene wanting us to call her Marjorie Taylor Greene. You don't get to decide what I call you when you're awful. Anyway, it did poorly stock-wise. In fact, historically poorly. So after markets closed on Wednesday, Facebook said in its fourth quarter earnings report that its daily active user base shrank for the first time in its history, which if we had a good news alert, is the good news alert for the week. Less people are using Facebook, praise whatever. Anyway, its stock then tumbled 24.3%, which when your like market capitalization is based on a combination of the alignment of the stars and pig organs, it could be $680 billion one day, $898 a different day. Who knows? Hundreds of billions of dollars going away that was never based in anything. But supposedly that happened, Sabrina. Less people are using their service, and so a bunch of money that never existed is now.
Is it sad that I'm genuinely surprised that today or yesterday was barely the first day where they saw the drop. I mean, I kind of been seeing a slight decline in how people thought about Facebook over the years, but the fact that it's barely happening now.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I'll celebrate it, but wow.
Yeah. I think people here had been using it less, but they were able to like get people in other parts of the world. But like overall now it's going down. And it's definitely true for me. I use Facebook I have a couple of group chats that I can't easily replicate in text messages. And I have some old photos on there. But the idea that like I would actively spend time on Facebook is madness to me. Maybe I'm in a bubble. Maybe other people's experience is different. I don't know, Sabrina, what's your relationship like to Facebook?
You know, I really don't use it anymore at all. I think I have an account, but it's not really active anymore. And yeah, it's just the matter of, if anything, I just used to use it to connect with like older family members. And it seems like it's more like the older generation, where the younger generations are moving to like TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. It's just, it's older people. And the thing about older people is that they're a little bit closer to the end of their life than some other people. So
a little bit thoughtless of you. I just said I was about to hit a milestone in a couple of days of my birthday. So yeah, no, I'm going to die, Sabrina. I get it. Thanks.
Happy birthday.
Anyway. Yeah, well, thanks. Now he seems to acknowledge this, saying that people have more places to spend their time. Apps like TikTok are growing very quickly. Of course, we can't write off Rumble. This is why our focus on Reels is so important over the long term. I am going to guess, and this is a guess, that Reels is their version of TikTok, because Facebook just takes whatever becomes popular, offers them a little bit of money. If they don't accept it, they just duplicate it, I assume. No, I get that they own Instagram. I get that. Reels is on Instagram. Okay, it's just the short stuff. I'm not gonna comment on it. I find it incomprehensible to follow all that. But anyway, also they're losing money on Metaverse. They've apparently lost something like $10 billion over the last year on their Metaverse spending, their reality labs. That followed $4.5 billion lost in 2019, $6.6 billion lost in 2020, which I get, like when you're preparing a technology, you're developing it, you're gonna lose money. That is an astonishing amount of money to be losing on any given year.
Listen, I get the appeal of the Metaverse. I also played MMOs back when I was younger. I was into World of Warcraft. I'm all for, you know, having a second life and pouring a whole bunch of money in it and just knowing that it's going down the drain. I get it.
Yeah, I had a Moonkin. These communities have existed for a very long time. I think I understand that the people talking about the Metaverse theoretically are the ones who know the most about it, since they're working on it, developing it. But they talk about it as if they know the least about it. Have you noticed that? Like, they talk about it as if they've never been on the internet before and don't know that this is effectively the same as all of those other things. I don't know. We're gonna talk more about the Metaverse later on. Apparently there's big money to be made or stolen there. So maybe they know more than I do. In any event, this hour is passing so fast. We're gonna jump to our second break. When we come back, actual cancel culture coming at you after this. Okay, we have little time, but we're gonna do it. Let's jump into this.
There's a book that we've seen that's in libraries and lots of schools that features a story of two daughters having sex with their dad.
Oh, wow.
They get their dad drunk to have sex with them. Oh, and this is like a book. Oh,
should a book like that be in a school?
No.
No?
No.
Just get that out of the school.
Absolutely.
Why do the kids need to read that?
That book is actually the Bible.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, that's the Bible, and that's just the ground floor for the delights revealed in the Old and New Testament. Anyway, that was an excerpt from a recent TikTok from The Good Liars, getting into a little bit of the hypocrisy of the right wing, the new wave of book bannings and cancellations that they're doing. They spent a year railing against cancel culture, and this year it's all, I don't want you to be able to read this book. So it's been a fun little back-to-back set of years for them. But although there they sort of back off the banning of the Bible, the banning spree has gone insane. And it's actually now stretching sort of beyond even the individual attempts to ban books. Let me give you some information coming from a report by NBC News, who did a profile of a few different schools and students who had up until recently been able to have what they called a safe haven library, where they were able to read books with characters who were members of the LGBTQ community, read depictions of sex that they hadn't seen in popular culture. That's all gone now. Those books are getting banned. Hundreds of titles have been pulled from libraries across the state, sometimes over the objections of school librarians, several of whom say they face increasingly hostile work environments and mounting pressure to preemptively pull books that might draw complaints. So this is taking place in Texas. So there's the individual books that get banned, and then there's the culture, what you might call a cancel culture, where the librarians are so scared about getting in trouble that they are themselves looking for books to pull so that they can avoid complaints. NBC News apparently looked at a sampling of 100 school districts. There's way more than this, so bear in mind that for the numbers. 75 formal requests by parents or community members to ban books from libraries during the first 4 months of the school year. In comparison, only one library book challenge was filed at those districts during the same time period a year earlier. So it's 75 times worse in one third the time. A handful of the districts reported more challenges this year than in the past two decades combined. That is quite a culture that they're brewing up down there, Sabrina.
I think it's still so funny. How do we get from Tucker Carlson calling Psaki a little fascist for putting a disclaimer, or for being okay with putting a disclaimer on, you know, Joe Rogan's podcast on Spotify, but books from the school library, gotta get them out. How do they not see how hypocritical that is? When I say they, I mean like conservative, and I imagine that these must be conservative parents who are making these requests.
Yep. Yeah, they are. It's conservative parents and also the AstroTurf social movement that this represents. So it would be easy and sometimes accurate to look at the people who are pushing for this sort of thing, the right wing politicians and the right wing pundits, and say, like, we might say, do you not realize what world you're creating? That you're going to create, you know, kids who are completely ignorant of history, that don't see themselves in the work, all of that. And look, some of them know what world they're creating and they want it. They are Christian fascists. They want that sort of world to be reflected in our education system. But for others, I want to be very clear. I don't think Tucker Carlson cares at all about these books, any of them. Some kid in Austin can go to a public library and read a book about like a gay relationship. He's not losing sleep over that. This is not about the outcome, it's about the process. Because if we have a year or two of a ton of parents getting activated to go and make death threats at, you know, school board meetings and harass librarians, what those parents are not doing is looking critically at the GOP and wondering why they're not advocating for their actual economic interests, things that are actually core to your life, the quality of life that you'll have. It is just very useful to spin people up and send them out, get them active politically in this way. Regardless of what world it creates, these are now dedicated active members of the GOP. I think that that's all that you need to know about this, honestly.
No, absolutely. I think that it's very understandable that like some of these parents are going to be able to like band together, try to get these books banned from schools. And I don't think it's unrealistic to see them later as we get closer to, you know, a presidential election. I think they would be like, okay, well, it wasn't that hard to like be active for this cause. I could go stomp, I could go rally for these candidates and in turn increase their numbers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you've been made terrified. And as we get closer to the election, the right wingers will terrify you about other things. You will live the rest of your life in constant fear while, you know, claiming constantly and loudly that you're the one who's all free and all that. Anyway, let me give you a little bit more information that we've covered previously about the content of the books that are generally being targeted. All but a few of the challenges target books dealing with racism or sexuality, the majority of them featuring LGBTQ characters and explicit descriptions of sex. Often they are written by either people of color, people from the LGBTQ community, so they are being targeted. One parent, though, asked the district to remove a children's biography of Michelle Obama, arguing that it promotes reverse racism against white people. So she's worried about racism, sort of, while engaging in an act of it. A parent in the Dallas suburb of Prosper wanted the school district to ban a children's picture book about the life of Black Olympian Wilma Rudolph because it mentions racism that Rudolph faced growing up in Tennessee in the 1940s. They weren't claiming it was inaccurate. They just didn't like that it was discussed at all. This is the most pathetic, ignorant, weak approach to the world. And I get that they're scared. I get that they have, you know, millions and millions of dollars being pumped into a right-wing media infrastructure that's trying to terrify them constantly. But we should be able to expect more of parents than going around banning picture books.
That's so wild to me, like especially if it comes to like athletes who are like people of color. Like they'll talk about like, oh yeah, we like these athletes and we like that there's like books about them, but they don't want to talk about and they don't want the students to learn about the actual challenges that those athletes had to face to get there in regards to like the racist challenges, you know?
100%. Yeah, no, you're totally right. Okay, with that said, we're running rapidly out of hour and I wanna make sure that we get to the story. So let's jump into the last topic of this first hour. The unionization effort at Starbucks in the US and Canada has been accelerating. Employees at 54 stores across 19 states are pursuing union elections, according to organizers. 15 of those stores joined the union drive just this week, petitioning federal labor officials to set a vote. The filing corresponds with the start of contract negotiations between Starbucks and unionized workers in Buffalo. We've previously reported on the quite successful efforts in Buffalo. Last month, Starbucks workers at three different New York stores held union elections. A majority voted in favor at two of the three locations, unionizing 64 workers. Now some 30 Starbucks workers in Arizona are wrapping up their own election by mail. Employees at three more in the Buffalo area are also beginning their voting this week. So it sort of started a little bit slowly, at least here in the US. Canada successfully had some of this back in June to August of last year in 2020. But Sabrina, it is really accelerating here in the US. You're seeing it across multiple states.
I know, I'm so excited. And finally, not only California, because I think there's some unionization efforts going on in about San Jose, but just yesterday, Los Angeles, there's a Starbucks location in Los Angeles that is filing to try to get unionization as well. So it's one thing if maybe it was just on the East Coast where the unionization efforts could kind of be controlled at the very least, but now that it's spreading to different states, I think we're seeing a lot of dominoes fall. I'm so excited for this. I'm so happy. I'm so excited for the unionization effort for the Starbucks workers who just want better working conditions and slightly better pay. And I predict that once we get most of the locations unionized, and there's a lot of them, there's thousands across the country, I think that eventually the Starbucks messaging for like trying to attract new workers will be like, we're pro union, come work for us.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, this entire time they're doing whatever they legally can to stop it.
Yeah, it's like the Republicans who are like going back to their states and like, look at this infrastructure spending we have. Don't ask me how I voted on it. It definitely, I think you have a good point. Yeah, like look at all these companies that have been like forced to increase wages and now we're like, look at the wages that we give out. Yeah, but you didn't want to do that. We had to make you. I think that's a very good prediction. Look, and people in the chat, by the way, are talking about in Seattle, they think that there's four stores. So it's entirely possible that in our searching, we have missed some, but I would be interested in talking to someone in the LA location if what you were saying is true, that there is one there. But anyway, look, as we said, as in a lot of these efforts, it is about things like money, but it's also about security and safety. As in a lot of these other recent labor movements, people are worried about the exposure that they have or the extra work they have to do as a result of the pandemic. And if you take a look at some of the Yahoo News coverage of this, they've profiled people whose family members have gotten COVID because it's just they're packing too many people in these stores, those sorts of things. So, you know, good on the union effort. We'll see how it goes. That said, if you're watching our linear platforms, that is all that we have for you today. Thank you for joining us. But if you're on YouTube or on Twitch or on the members app, Sabrina and I are going to be breaking down not only a Masked Singer unmasked, but also international news in Meanwhile In. So we're going to take a short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.